This is Bucky Bacaw with the Backyard Chicken Broadcast. As regular listeners have certainly become aware, last September I spent a good times-filled week in southern New Hampshire and a corner of Maine, where I profiled many of the wide range of chickeners in the region. There's quite a bit of homesteaders, hobbyists, near-off-the-gritters, and innovative small urban agricultural businesses. All of the shows are available on the Backyard Chicken Broadcast archives at radioforall.net. Our most recent broadcast was a profile of Yellow House Farm in Barrington, where I met Robert and Joe, who were clearly experts, and I think fair to say role models, for many others. So it's not surprising that I've edited three informative episodes out of the time I spent with them. In today's episode, we go into more detail on the hows and whys of breeding, and how it all connects to the Bacaw agenda.
Earlier, we were kind of talking about, people would say, oh, well, that's a broody breed. And you started telling me a little bit about the difference between breed and strain, yes. So tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, when you find people talking about chickens, especially when people are beginning with chickens, is they'll say, what breed is good for this? Or what breed is good for that? Or this is a great breed to do such and such. But most breeds were developed between the mid-1800s and the mid-1900s. Although there are certainly some really great breeds that come from before that. But those breeds were developed for an ideal. But we never think that chickens are, every year for chickens is a generation. So 5 years is five generations. So you get 30 years, and that's a lot of generations of birds. And every bird is really only as good as that year's selection. So like if you get people say, oh, Buff Orpingtons, for example, they're nice layers and they're gentle and they're such and such. But they only are if their current breeder is selecting them to be that thing. Just to say a breed is good at something isn't necessarily true. Mm. They're supposed to be good at that thing. But if the breeder isn't selecting them to be good at the laying or to have that proper type or to have the good coloring or to have the well-muscled carcass for meat production, then they won't have it, regardless of whether or not those birds are supposed to. So people often get something say, oh, I got Dorkings because I wanted them to be good meat birds. And then they go, oh, they really weren't that good. It's not that Dorkings aren't good. It's that strain, that particular breeder's birds were not being selected for meat production. But yet another breeder's birds very well may be. Mm-hmm. So often people try a breed and they go, oh, this breed isn't good for that. And that wouldn't be an honest statement because another breeder's birds may be closer to that breed ideal that was hoped for than that particular strain was, if that makes sense.
Yes, it does. Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Since we're on this topic, I've heard a lot of casual people who are kind of dabbling in breeding. They have this idea that maybe we can breed quiet roosters for the urban market. What do you think about the possibility of that? Is that something that
well,
is feasible?
Chickens have proven themselves over the multiple millennia of us working with them to be very malleable. Do I think it can happen? Well, we've developed chickens that can crow for a minute straight.
That's right. I've played that on my show.
So, with that in mind, I'm sure that could be focused on. The difficulty with that, so a rooster's, a cock's crow, comes via his father. I believe that is the genetic, the way it passes down. So you crow like your dad. So that would have to become a point of selection. The difficulty with points of selection is that you can only select for so many things at once. So if you were to actually go after a crow, for an amazingly ancient fighting cock out of India, the asil has a different crow, has what you could think of it as a modified crow. So could you affect that crow? Certainly. Now the difficulty, though, is can you affect that crow and select for meat production while selecting for egg production and have the color you like? No. Because you can't be doing, it's like anything you do in life, you can't be doing a good job at all of these things at once. So you might select a bird that crows less, but it might end up laying 50 eggs a year.
Right.
You know, so that's, you know, that's part of it. I think part of the problem with the urban chicken and the urban rooster or cockbird specifically is that we have a lot of long-standing biases against country things. So our last home in a city, I would get up every morning, and my neighbor would let out their three yip-yip dogs, and that was the most obnoxious thing I could possibly think of in the morning was a Yip Yip dog.
Did they start up their motorcycle too? Or?
Well, there you go. And their you know, their truck or whatnot that you'd hear. And but there's nothing like a Yip Yip dog first thing in the morning. There's nothing a rooster has on a Chihuahua. Or whatever those were. I don't even know. But I think with roosters, you just assume, oh, there's a rooster. It must be noisy because of all the storybooks we read, because of all of the... But roosters have been with humans for as far back as we know. And they would sleep in your house. You can sleep. We have, at any given point, I mean, how many hundreds of roosters here? And they don't wake us up. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it is the psychology of deciding not to be woken up by the rooster.
Right.
So give it a try. They'll find that the rooster actually probably won't keep them up unless they decide it's going to keep them up, because the trucks don't keep them up in the city. The people coming out of the bars don't keep them up in the city. And the Yip Yip dogs don't keep them up in the city. So why are the roosters going to keep them up?
Right.
You know?
You should tell them about your decibel.
Yes, I've measured the decibel of the planes overhead when I've lived near either LaGuardia or JFK. Mm-hmm. And I've measured the decibels of the motorcycle club that likes to ride around and in circles in Astoria Park. And I've also kept a log of what times they do that. Because one of the things about roosters, it's not just that they're loud, right? It's that they crow in the middle of the night.
3:30.
So they say.
Cocks crow.
Right. And so I've measured all that stuff. And actually, scientifically, they're not a noise nuisance.
No.
Any greater than any other urban noise nuisance.
They never would have been in everybody's house for 3,000 years if you actually couldn't sleep. Eventually, it would have been a determinant from domestication. they're just sort of, exactly, right? So she votes for it.
Yeah, we
right?
all think that's funny.
Let us back into the city. Yes, right.
Right.
Well, and that's another thing, too, is people don't realize that you used to have roosters in the city. No, you used to have bantams, were quite common to have in the city, because until very recently, I mean, you didn't have refrigeration. We say recently in a historic sense. I mean, pre-refrigeration, so my great-grandmother would go to the market, and you would get the chicken, you bring it home to the basin, you kill the chicken, you pluck the chicken, you prep the chicken, you cook the chicken. And chickens and farms are very close to and part, you know, with the city life. Mm-hmm. So now we've just become so separated from it that we don't realize or we don't remember that the vast majority of human life has been in concert with chickens.
All right, is there anything else you want to add?
Okay, you had mentioned this idea of the redemocratization. And that's something I talk about with chickens all the time. The great thing about chickens, real breeding. So, you know, people often are intimidated by real breeding because, A, we've lost what real chicken shows are about. And real chicken shows where people will complain, they'll say, I had a problem with this hatchery, or I didn't know, and then this happened. Chicken shows were trade shows. Shows were trade shows. They were peer-reviewed. Judges were qualified to judge by being approved by the APA. And so you would go, and then if in the poultry press such and such a breeder's bird was featured, it's because the known judges of the day had looked at it and said to the world, this bird is a bird of quality. And so you knew where to go get your birds. Now people just put up whatever their spiel is on the internet or whatnot, and there's nothing that says to the buyer that this bird is actually what we say it is. And that's what shows were about. The other thing about it is that, and one of the things I love about poultry is that they are smaller. They cost much less than trying to breed cattle. You can actually take one breed. That's the trick. When people begin, you get lots of breeds so that you can see what you like. But once you've done that, if you have the discipline to settle on one breed, then it's an art form. It's science that meets art, and everybody can do it. So, you know, you look at skiing now. How much does it cost to go skiing for a day? But with your poultry, anyone can do it. It's not a sport for the rich. It's not a sport for the poor. It's anyone can do that and enjoy it and go to poultry shows and have the camaraderie and bring their birds up and learn about them. And when they're really well-bred to the standard, they're gorgeous. Join the APA, go to the shows, learn more and more, and it can be an art form that you take as far as you'd like to. And anyone can do it. And that's one of the things I think is really cool about chickens.
Yeah, and that's a good time.
Yeah, indeed.
I sure did enjoy that visit. Stay tuned for my third and final of the Yellow House Farm interviews, a fascinating primer on the real way to cook a real chicken.
Bucky the Dog. The Bucky the Dog.